Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. And today I have with me Deb Coviello. Hey, Deb.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show. I can't wait for this conversation.
Wonderful. Me too. So let me tell you guys a little bit about Deb and we'll get started. She is an advisor, author, podcast host, and founder of Illumination Partners, a consulting firm for CEOs navigating change. A trusted partner to C-suite leaders, Deb brings 30 plus years of experience and strategy in quality and operational excellence roles, combined with her 20 years in the flavors and fragrance industry to support her clients as they work together to identify, assess, and solve the issues that are preventing their business growth. Certified as Lean and Six Sigma Black Belt in Process Improvement, she has developed powerful programs devoted to helping CEOs identify emerging leaders, understanding people are your greatest tool in your toolbox. And she is also a member of Women in Flavor and Fragrance Commerce, WFFC, an avid curler with the Cincinnati Curling Club. Wow. Okay. And a mother of three and resides in Cincinnati, Ohio with her husband, Dan, of 32 years. Wow. Wonderful. So Deb, when you were a little girl, what did you want to grow up and be?
I should have known you were going to ask me this question, but going back there, I don't know if it was what I wanted to be, but I certainly knew what I loved to do. And back then I was a creative. I loved to sing. I loved to do arts and crafts, tell stories, write stories. My mother thought for sure I would go into literature, writing, acting, or something. And then a bad thing happened. I entered the school systems for which they didn't praise or enjoy my verboseness, my speaking. I was a talker. I became disruptive, even though I had a lot to say. So society kind of squelched that creativity. I'm fine. I recovered, for which I then pursued a technical career and ultimately did some of this quality and operational excellence work. But I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I simply loved being a creative, speaking my voice, sharing it with the others, talking with other people to try to come up with solutions. I eventually wound back up in that space, but honestly, just a creative person and just wanting to connect with people.
I love that. And so when you were younger, and as you said, you got into the school system and then you got to college, obviously, there must have been something that drew you to being in tech or going in that direction.
So what wound up happening along the way is I had an analytical mind. I loved solving problems. I loved science and math. It was just very interesting to me. It explained the world to me, for which I started doing pretty well at it. And then went into college, studied biomedical engineering, thinking I was going to solve people problems, make them last forever. And then the brakes came on and realized I don't like working with blood. I don't like working with the anatomy and all of that other stuff. I don't know why I pursued it. I love biology, but I had this distinct place and time for which I realized I'd rather do something different. And so I kind of took a path into manufacturing, but it went back to my roots, taking nothing and turning it into something, taking a good and converting it into some electronics or a flavor that goes into something that we enjoy eating. It was always that element of creation. And so even though I was in the defense industry, electronics, telecom, and eventually the flavors and fragrance industry, while I showed up in the world as a technical person solving problems and using all kinds of tools, later on, I went back to being a people person and leadership and how could I solve problems and found my voice. So that's kind of how I got into tech, but it doesn't define me as I kind of grew out of that and became more the person who I am now.
So, of course, I'm always curious about certain things that happen to promote us to a different place in our lives, you know, whether it's a career choice or a personal choice. But, you know, for you, was it that you found that you were getting bored? It was tiring. Like, what was it that you lost inspiration and gained inspiration for?
So the short answer is yes to all. Everything was starting to happen, and it can happen for anybody along the way. There's a number of things that happened along the way. You know, this is a story I tell all the time, that when I started feeling comfortable in a role and I would start speaking up again, people wanted my mind. They needed my technical expertise and advice to make critical business decisions. But then there are these junctures throughout my career, education, et cetera, where I started speaking my mind and people didn't like it. And so I was finally at a place in a company that I am so grateful for affording me the opportunity for being a VP of quality, operational excellence, having broad scope of responsibility, traveling and trying out new things. But then I got to the point where you're right, I was getting bored. Just maintaining and doing the daily grind and dealing with crises, I was starting to get bored. I was starting to speak my mind and say different things about, you know, the way I lead is more important than the technical problems that I solve. I can have real smart people, the smartest people in the world, but that's not what we need to do as an organization. I started saying these things and leadership said, no, that's nice. That's nice, Deb. But, you know, where are you going to get the results? And when it was all about the results, I just felt like I didn't fit anymore until people, colleagues in the organization said, Deb, we need more people that think like you. Because if we get everybody that's just all about the results, we're not going to change. We need more people like you. So at the end of the day, while I was a little bit devastated by the leadership team that didn't appreciate my new way of thinking in order to get different results, I had the confidence and clarity that people around me says, no, we need people to think about how do we lead differently? How do we elevate people? So fast forward, I still got the results in that organization. However, I was later exited from the business and I honestly, they did it with grace and respect. And that's all I could have asked for. But it was the best thing that happened for me because then I found what I was really meant to do. Clarity. Who did I serve? How did I serve them? Yes, I still serve them technically, but I get to do more of the stuff that I really love to do. So it was the best thing that I was transitioned out. So yeah, it was an acute situation, but I'm glad it happened because it accelerated what I then became.
So I'm totally curious because of course, when we're, you know, you're talking about something that happened, right? And it's, but what did happen? So as you were transitioned out, how did you know where you were going? Because I think that's always the thing, right? The clarity and knowing what am I doing or where am I going or how is this going to work or who am I serving or so on and so forth. So how did that become clear for you?
So I didn't know where I was going. I did know I had a moment to pause. I had a little bit of a severance. I had a partner or spouse that was also earning money. I didn't have to panic and immediately go forward with activity and doing. And so often when we are at these junctures, people will often say, how quickly can I get my resume updated? Who can I know? Who do I need to network? And it's always activity. And what I find people lack is they never stop and think and just think and pause and go through that reflection. What have I done well? I still provide value. What I really like to do? How do I want to spend my time? Who can I serve? What will get me super jazzed? Am I willing to take a risk on myself? Or do I want to go back to who I was and what I did? So pushing the pause button, had a few months over the Christmas holidays to start thinking about that. And there were tears shed, a lot of walking, a lot of podcasting, reading, and rediscovering my creativity. I started writing. And then I realized, oh, I had a love for writing and expressing myself on my own terms. Okay, check the box. That's going to stick around. I realized I didn't want my role dictated to me. I said, I want to be in service to people that really value my skills. I just have to find those people. So through in that process, I knew what I wanted to do, but I had the confidence to figure out how. I didn't have everything checked off, but then I started networking and talking to people and driving what I think the new Deb is going to be doing for people, trying it on people, experimenting. I never had a place to do that, but I started taking a risk on myself, trying things out, see what resonated, and all of a sudden clarity came to me. I'm here to serve C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow, navigate their challenges with confidence. Mind you, that took about 3 years to figure out, but I was on that path. So taking the time, self-reflection, get clear on what you don't want to do, what are you running away from, and what do you want to run towards? So I knew I wanted to continue to be do purposeful work to help others. And then also discovered I didn't want to be stuck again, and I don't want other leaders to be stuck. So some of my work, similar to you, is to help leaders that are very talented, who get to that point of being stuck, provide them that clarity, and move forward to the work they're supposed to do. So a little bit of time. Give yourself it grace like and it. Figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then you, being in the seat of the listener, so 3 years that you went without an income, or 3 years of experimenting and having a client going, maybe that's not right. Like, what did that look like?
So I'll get very technical or tactical what happened. So I, at the same time, was an Energizer bunny. I said, I got to get some work. I got to do something. I started networking with my first and second degree connections on LinkedIn. And something beautiful happened. The first person was somebody I already knew from an organization. They gave me a chance. They said, why don't you come in and look at my business and do an assessment? Oh, my. I still didn't have an elevator pitch. I still had no idea how to do an assessment. But by the good graces of a kind soul in my network, they valued me and took a chance on me. So fast forward through networking, talking to second degree connections. I love LinkedIn. You got to go there. It was a great networking tool if you didn't have a big external network versus the internal network that you had. Fast forward, I got 3 consulting gigs in 6 months.
Wow.
And then I said to myself, I am viable. I am on easy street. I started getting some income while I was using up the income that I had from my severance. So I felt wonderful, and I had work for actually follow-up work for about 1.5 to 2 years. And I was making money and spending money building my brand and marketing, et cetera. The caveat, the watch out, is you always need to do business development and creating relationships with people. Don't stop when you're working. That should be a certain percent of your time. Keep that relationship building, evolving your brand. Because if you stop, then what will happen to you is what happened to me. For about 9 months or so, and I'm not blaming it on COVID, I didn't have steady money coming in. Had a lot of time to invest in a book that I wrote, invest in the podcast, invest in networking, but I had a gap and I paid for it. But it was a conscious decision for which I said, I will never, ever, ever not be in search of relationships and how I can serve people. So it wasn't easy. I had some luck in the beginning, but also maybe right time, right place, right people.
It sounds like it. And I think that a lot of us have experienced something similar. Yeah. And it actually made me think about, like my dad was in business for many years, and he would not always be selling, right? Mm-hmm. Or always be networking, or always be in connection. And I was talking to somebody this morning who was talking about a business, and literally they have one client. And I'm thinking, you can't do that. You have, right? Yeah. It's like, let's breathe now, because that just sounds scary to me.
And I'll tell you right now, at this moment, okay, I'll tell you, 6 months ago, I was sweating. Now I've got steady work, but any of it could come to an end right now. I'm actually hustling. And I would say I'm probably doing 1.5 jobs at this point. But the thing is, I got to hustle now, because there will be some dry spells, or I need to be investing in those relationships through podcasting, meeting people like you. You never know where it will go. It is a full-time plus job to not only do the work in your own business or venture, but also keeping the pipeline open so you create pull and maybe have to turn down work. And I know that is a long, long road. I don't yet have that, but it's a beautiful thing when you're hustling and somebody says, hey, I want to introduce you to somebody. But you can't do that unless you are heavily networking in the right places to find the people you can help.
I agree with that. So why did you choose the C-suite? I'm curious about that.
It's an interesting spot, because I remember coming up in my career, being a manager and a director, having the initiatives come down the hill and say, thou shalt execute this, for which we said, we don't understand why, but yes, I will do, because that's my performance review. And I always said, I wonder what it was like to be where the decisions are made, to see what it's all about and be a decision maker and influence many. That's why I kept driving to get into the C-suite and eventually got there. Didn't necessarily have a title of a COO or anything at that point, but I was on the senior leadership decision-making area. And then I got to see how those decisions were made. And it was met with success and also failures. Like, I didn't know what executive presence was. I didn't understand about building certain strategic relationships. I didn't know about quiet influence, stakeholder engagement, aligning with naysayers, all of that stuff, for which I struggled a little bit, eventually figured a lot out. And then I said to myself, first of all, C-suite leaders don't always have the answers. I want to partner with them. But I said, there is a demographic. There is like 80% of the population that's not in the C-suite. And I see them get stuck. They say, I've been working hard. They keep giving me more work, but I can't get up there. And then they give me feedback that I can't action on. They're not giving me a good reason why I can't move ahead. Well, first of all, they don't know how to give you feedback and they can't articulate what are some of those essential skills you need to be successful. So I help business leaders because I've been there and I want to be their partner, but I am hell-bent and focused on the next C-suite leader. And it's not necessarily by title, but if you got a mind and you see what the future looks like, but you just can't articulate and get it there, those are the people I want to serve.
Nice, because my next question was going to be, when you talk about, you know, there is, well, let me back up. There's a statistic that says only 21% of CEOs in the United States are female. I'm sure you've heard that before. Yeah. Okay. And so with that basis, you know, we're talking here about, well, okay, there's a lot of women, maybe they're SVPs or they're VPs or they're directors or what have you. And when you're talking about things like executive presence, or you're talking about how you, you know, go along with the naysayers, like all these little things that CEOs and anybody at the C-suite, you know, you have to collaborate. And so bottom line is, what is it that separates them from that level? And what is it that they could do? Like, what is one thing that they could do to be seen as somebody who could be at the C-level?
There's so much in that, but I would love to just respond to one particular part. Now, we've qualified 20% of the people are female that have the CEO title. What I would like to qualify is we probably should include those people that are at the COO, CFO, senior vice president, who have the ability to assess the landscape and provide insight to the CEO on what needs to be done. Because while they may not have CEO in title, they may be acting as a silent partner to the CEO and advising them on matters that they need to be aware of. So I do want to expand that demographic. I will say, however, for women who may not have gotten into the corporate environment and getting that title, gosh darn it, what's the statistic on women forming their own business and doing things on their own terms? I bet you that CEO statistic might go up a little bit. However, getting off my soapbox, but coming back to a little bit, what are they missing? There's so many things that I find are missing, but what I find is we have highly technical leaders that say the sky is falling, we need to do something. Yet they miss some essential ingredients in how they message versus communicate. They can communicate data and information for which they don't spawn any conversation. People are afraid to go first to weigh in. What they need to do, one, is articulate better, is that here is the risk, the sky is falling, it's getting worse, and if we don't invest X amount of money, we will lose X percent of market share, which translates into top line negative growth at the amount of X. And then you get the attention of the CFO and the CEO to say, oh, well, where'd you get your numbers from? Well, they could start poking at it, but at least you started a conversation. And that's one thing. And I will offer a part two. Anytime you're going to make a proposal, shop it around to people who you know who might be able to enrich your proposal. Because as soon as you put yourself out there on the line, there may be that person that says, oh, yeah, Deb and I talked about it. And that is the number. We agree. That is the percentage that we're dealing with right now. Then everybody will jump on. When you shop around things and try to get some consensus behind the scenes, you come forward stronger because it's not just you, but it's many. And that's what a CEO leader does, bring people along to the conversation to get a decision. Those are just a few things you need to learn, and they don't teach it.
No, they don't. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit. I don't have it in front of me. I thought maybe I do, but I don't. So I'm going to go off memory. Okay. So
We're good. Keep going.
You know, I'm ready. I was going to say that could be spotty. All right. So there was a recent study, and it was called something like cutting down the poppies or tall poppy syndrome. That's what it was. All right. So this was done by an organization in Canada, and basically they went to 103 different countries, and I believe they put out surveys. I don't know what they did, but it's not like a real, to me, like a real study is something where you have variables and, you know, you have your test group, your control group, the whole thing. Anyway, they found out their study was about successful women and how they were treated in the workplace. And it was really interesting because it's that tall poppy syndrome where there's a cutting down, right? They're going to cut you down to size. So that's a translation of it. Anyways, because I don't have this right in front of me. I kind of could have sworn I did, but anyway, it was some crazy numbers about how men will usually try to undermine women that are successful, and women will not support their peers and colleagues. It's something like that. I've got to find this, but you know, I'm talking about this. And so what are your thoughts initially on what I'm saying? Like, do you find this with, you know, women? I don't want to say they're afraid to be successful, but when you feel you're not going to be supported, right? And whether it's men or women, but that feeling of not being supported, I think, can be a deterrent to some women because society has never really been in support of successful women. What do you think?
I'm sorry, I go against the grain. While there is a demographic that this may be the truth, I don't buy it now. And I don't negate the fact that maybe historically in the past, maybe my mother's generation or grandmother's generation, for which that may have been the truth. But I question continuing the narrative in present day, for which we play victim to what the statistics say. This is a little bit about taking control of your mindset and what are you in control of?
I think that's hard for people because they have to know themselves. And I say that because of the work I do. A lot of times we don't look inside of ourselves. We look outside of ourselves for validation. Okay, am I doing okay? Am I doing this right? Tell me what I'm doing. Oh, should I do more of this? Should I do less of this? And we may not even realize that's an undercurrent to what's happening, but we are creating that insecurity where I believe other people respond to it in a way that is probably not supportive because they're confused by, are you a leader? Are you, what are you? I don't know from day to day, what's happening here? What do you just say to that?
Yeah. And just not let society dictate who you are, the profile you're supposed to be in. It is the reality for me is it's an underdeveloped skill. You know, it could be from genetics and nature, women, but men as well. But women may manifest it more as being caregivers and wanting to be servant and be helpful. Am I doing the right thing? Is the home solid? Do we have a game plan to get the kids on time? We're always making sure and checking in. You know, we're the great thing that keeps things together. Again, nurturing, again, that may be in our DNA. But out of that, then you go into the school system and you're graded. You're right and you're wrong. It's all binary for which then you have to check in with them. Did I get the answer right? Without embracing the process, did you learn anything along the way that you can apply to future skills? So we're all judged. So societally says, you know, you're right or you're wrong, for which then people don't want to take risks because then they get a bad grade. Or sometimes they have people that just don't know how to give feedback or coach. So when we talk about unsupported, I also think society doesn't set up the leadership around successful women, talented women, to give them the feedback in a way that is constructive and positive and actionable. So there's so many underdeveloped skills along the way for which then women have a tendency to say, okay, who can I get validation from? Versus you say, you know what? I really love to do this work. I wish I could do more of this work. You know what? I'd like to do more in the area of training. You know what? I'd like to step my foot out and then start figuring out what you love to do, what you're good at, and pursue that and be in control. And if the environment doesn't support it, you always have a decision to move in a different direction.
I do believe in what you're saying. Absolutely. Yeah. I also find, though, that societal biases are something that we interject. And as an example, when we talk about there's descriptive bias and prescriptive bias, descriptive bias says, hey, you're a woman. That's the description, right? Okay, sure. We know you're a woman there. Prescriptive bias is, this is how we expect you to behave. The issue being, right, this go back, you know, going back to being a girl, right? I'm sure you were called bossy. I was. And, oh, wait a minute. What? Oh, I'm supposed to be a nice girl, sugar and spice, everything nice. That's what, you know, little girls are made of and
talk
women
too much.
Are made of.
I talk too much.
Yes. Be yes. Quiet. Talk too much. Right. I did too. I mean, but we can go down the list of things, right, that were very limiting in what they said. And that tends to make you go, oh, maybe I need to not exhibit that. I know for some women where they are assertive and then they think, oh no, what if I've offended somebody? Oh no, what do I need to make nice with, you know, these people over here? What do I need to do? And so you can't be consistent when you have internalized this sort of bias that the rest of society also has. And that, I think, is the game changer when you overcome that. What would you say to that?
Well, I do support that, because once I made the decision to be in control of my career and destiny, though risky as a business owner, I realized I can say and do whatever I want. I'm going to work with the people that get me. I have a mentor, and one of the most refreshing things they said to me when they saw me showing up on video doing my marketing, I'm Deb Coviello, I'm going to talk to you about such and such. He said, Deb, you know, you're really smart. I said, but you're so stiff. He said, get over yourself. Be who you're meant to be. Throw your hands up, roll your eyes. I flub my words. That's part of my trademark. I just got over myself, and not everybody's going to like me, but a lot of people really do. And you'd be surprised that once you unleash yourself from what other people say you shouldn't be to, I'm going to be this way, and there's groups of people that like you this way, you find you're going to have so much more fun and enjoy the relationships if you just start being yourself and not be prescriptive in how you act.
I agree with that. But what would you say to women that are in certain corporate positions where there's not a lot of space to, let's say, be yourself?
Yeah, maybe you have to, you know, you have to show up a certain way. You have to look professional. There are certain language and cultures and values for which you need to fall within the lines. You can do that. You can do that. You can make good money. You can have a good career. But I will tell you, it's not sustainable. When I ask people about why, you know, making good decisions about their career, I say I have three qualifiers. Are you passionate about it? Do you want to do it? Do you need to do it? And so sometimes women may have to be within an environment where they need the income, and that's fine and that's noble. They may want it for the prestige and the title and the travel and all that stuff. But if they're not passionate and they're constantly having to manage their energy to fit within a box, if you got two out of the three, you can survive. But after 2 or 3 years, you're going to be totally drained. And if you can only check the box, well, I need the money, I don't necessarily want the job, and I'm not passionate about it, a year, you're going to crash and burn. So you need to evaluate your energy. This is some of my decision-making criteria. You can do it, but it's not sustainable.
Yep. I know for me, I was toast. I could not sustain it. And that was very evident in the last culture I was in for the last job, which was 15 years ago that I had. I absolutely was being myself. I have little air quotes, tiny air quotes going here, but I was being myself, and I realized it didn't fit. And at the time I had no clue what that was even going to mean. But I think you have to pay attention to those signs.
Signs, oh, woo-woo stuff, right? Universe stuff, stuff that's fuzzy and you kind of can't put your arms around. But you know what? It's about that consciousness slowing down a little bit, listening. What are people saying? You know, Deb, you got a really great voice. Oh, yeah. You know, I got this great voice. No, Deb, you've got a really good voice. Okay, I'll have a podcast. I'll do teaching and training. You got to listen to those things, because that, if nothing else, if you can't figure out where you're supposed to go, those little signals are going to start pulling you in the direction you need to go to do the stuff you're passionate about and the things you're really good at.
I love that. And so, Deb, before we wrap it up, a couple things. One, I would love for people to know where to find you. And number two, what are some tips or anything you feel you would like to leave the audience with?
All right. Well, Tracy, a sincere thank you for such a good conversation. You push my buttons a little bit here because these are hot topics we need to be talking about to create that awareness, because women actually have so many opportunities. Not always their circumstances, but to get a hold of me, I would love to connect with people. Dropinceo.com website is where you can find me. Also look up the Drop In CEO podcast. That's free offer advice supporting C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow, women especially. And also LinkedIn, Deborah A. Coviello. You can find me there. I would love a conversation and connect with your audience. But if I could leave a parting thought, if you're on a journey and trying to figure out what you're doing, one of the things I need you to do right now is in the area of feedback. If you want to course correct and understand how people think or view about you, you need to ask for feedback in the right way. Ask your boss or people, what should I continue to do? Again, a direct question, not how am I doing? They won't give you the answer. What should I continue doing? Hopefully they give you something that you're a superpower at. What should I start doing? Meaning, what can you do a little bit more of to enhance your superpower? And then ask somebody, what should I change? It may not affect you now, but if you don't stop doing it, it will affect you. We don't know how to ask for feedback or give feedback, for which high-performing women need to know so they can action on and make a difference. So feedback, improve that skill.
I love that. And I think how you phrased it is perfect, because a lot of times when you give people too broad of a question, they really don't know how to answer it.
We need to be in control of our futures. So ask very prescriptive questions to force the interested party to think and provide something that's positive and actionable.
I completely agree. Deb, it has been wonderful talking to you. And I've really enjoyed this conversation. I know the audience has as well. So thank you. And everybody, thank you for coming on and listening. And of course, if you have any questions, you know where to find Deb. You have questions for me, you know where to find me. Again, I will give you the email address of business@tracycrossley.com. And with that, I'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com, and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.